At Operation Grow Without Cancer, we believe every journey deserves hope, truth, and freedom of choice. In a world clouded by conventional wisdom, we're shining a light on natural health strategies long kept in the shadows. Together, we can embrace healing, share knowledge, and move toward a future free from cancer. Welcome to Hidden Healings Uncensored. Thanks for joining us on Hidden Healings Uncensored, the official podcast of Operation War Without Cancer. You'll find us all over episodes on YouTube, Rumble, Spotify, and Faith and Freedom TV. But today's guest is a great guy who we've met before, and I'm just so excited to talk to him and get this, his information, his 40 years of secret information that they don't want you to know about that we're getting out there today. So my friend is James Templeton. He's a 40-year stage 4 melanoma survivor who turned a terminal diagnosis into a message of hope. A fifth generation Texan, he abandoned failed conventional treatments and literally crawled out of a hospital at 2 a.m. to pursue natural hearing. What a hero. Through relentless research, James discovered the life-saving power of food and holistic therapies. He went on to found the Uni Key Health Systems and the Templeton Wellness Foundation, helping others reclaim their health through nutrition and lifestyle. His journey taught him that the diet that heals you isn't always the one that keeps you well. We talk about that a lot here on Hidden Healings Uncensored. It's a lesson that continues to shape his philosophy of long-term sustainable wellness. James shares his remarkable story in his memoir, I Used to Have Cancer, a powerful testament to faith, resilience, and the body's ability to heal when given the right tools. We're going to show you that book. It's come up with a new exciting cover, and I'm sure it's gaining more traction than ever, much like Ed Griffin's book and my father's book that all of you know about. I'm so excited today to get to hang out with my buddy James Templeton. Hey, James, how are you doing today?
Hey, John. Great to see you.
Great to see
Always
you.
Always good to be with you.
It's fantastic. And so that the audience, you know, Templeton is a name that people know. Templeton Wellness Foundation is a something people know, but introduce people to you on my channel that may be seeing you for the very first time today.
Well, you know, I'm James Templeton, as you say, and I am a fifth generation Texan. And I went through kind of the eye of the needle, I guess you say, like a lot of people. And I have been the last 40 years had my sleeves rolled up. And I just keep on it and try to stay on the path all the time. I've been successful at just, you know, still staying around, you know.
It's 40 years, it's, 40 years in the freedom from cancer fight is a long time, and I appreciate it.
When they originally told me, you know, you don't have a lot of time to live unless you can get through these chemotherapy treatments, but that's part of the story. And if you want me to, I can tell the story.
Well, how did you find out you had cancer 40 years ago? How did you find out? What was going through your mind at that time?
You know, I was living in Texas and I thought that things were going pretty good for me at the time. Now I had a little farm and had a little baby girl and, you know, was married and had, a beautiful wife and everything was going pretty well. I had several successful businesses and they were doing well. And, you know, I guess you could say, I like to say, I thought I had life by the tail and, you know, everything's going good. You know, I was getting up every day and I was running a lot. I was one of these runners that you see running down the road and highway. And I kind of got into it and I was running up to 60 miles a week and,
wow.
And just training and you know, working out in the gym some. And I thought that was the right thing to do. And, you know, I had found out about a fellow, his name was Jim Fix. And I don't know if you remember that name or not, but Jim Fix.
Yeah, he was a runner. He was a famous runner, right?
He was a runner and he was kind of the runner that the complete book of running. He wrote a book. And one of my friends introduced me to his book and I read it and I thought, well, you know, this is great. He thinks like I do. You know, I was into the running because my father and my grandfather both died of heart disease.
Wow.
at a very young age.
What ages?
Well, my father was 46.
That's too young.
And he just went to a business meeting one day. He walked outside down the steps and fell over, and that was the end of him. And, you know, it's like shocked us all. I mean, to the core. And his father died at 36. And of course, way back then, his father was a cowboy down in Texas, and he, you know, was having some heart issues and this and that's what I understand, but I'm sure it was like a heart attack, you know, and back in those days, people were just, you know, having heart issues and they just die usually. And that's what happened to him. But,
I put that up there.
Okay.
Yeah. I put that up there. I just wanted to share it with while you were talking. Go ahead. I can still see you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought something was wrong. You'll have to edit that out. But
no, it's okay. Yeah. It's okay. People understand. I just wanted to put the book up while you were while you were talking. So go ahead.
Yeah. So anyway, I was, you know, enamored of Jim Fix. I thought that, hey, if I do what he does, I won't have heart problems, you know, and maybe I can sidestep this issue that my grandfather and my father had. And a lot of heart kind of disease ran in our family. So I decided that, you know, if I was going to get ahead of it, I had to take care of myself. I eat kind of low fat diet. And, you know, I was eating kind of pretty much a vegetarian diet. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know. I thought that was the right thing to do. And I read another book that was called Eat to Win. And that was a big kind of book for runners and endurance athletes. So I got into this stuff and I really thought I was on the right track. And one day this all kind of came to an end because I went in to my office after running one morning, and I used to get up early in the morning and run. And, but I went into the office. I had a paper laying there on my desk, morning's paper. I grabbed it, I looked at it, and one of the headlines was Jim Fix, you know, running guru dies of a heart attack while jogging. And I couldn't believe it. I think he was 52 years old. He just fell over out on the side of the road, you know, and just collapsed and had a heart attack.
I do remember that, kind of like Jack LaLanne or somebody like that.
Yeah, he was kind of the big guy for endurance athletes at that time. So it shocked me so much, you know, that I didn't know what to do. And I'm like, I'm doing all this stuff, you know, maybe I need to get checked out. Maybe I'm not as in good a shape as I think I am. Mm-hmm. So I decided that day I'm going down to get a cardio stress test. And the cardio stress test was done by a doctor in town. He was an internal medicine doctor, and he did
that. That was 1984, right?
1985.
Okay.
And I decided, I made an appointment, and you know, 2 or 3 weeks later, I went in to see him. And I go in, and he gets me on the treadmill and everything, checks me out thoroughly, all that. He gets me on the treadmill and gets me to walk in on there, and then he's got me running on there and all this stuff, and he's, you know, he's got you all hooked up with everything. And he's at the end of it, he says, "My gosh, James," he says, "you're in tremendous shape." He said, "No one's ever done as well as you have on this test." He says, "You know, I just think you're going to live a long time if you keep doing what you're doing now." He said, "I just think you're going to do very well. I wouldn't worry about anything at this time with your heart. Your heart seems good. I've checked you out thoroughly. Everything's great." On the way out of the office, you know, me feeling good about myself, then he goes, "Well, there's one thing," he says, James, "there's one thing that I noticed. I don't think it's anything, you know, it's probably nothing," he says, "but there's a mole on your back," and he says, "it looks a little different. It looks a little suspicious to me, like maybe it's not healthy. I don't know, but I doubt if there's anything to it. I wouldn't worry about it." He says, "When you get a chance, go down to a dermatologist and get checked out." He goes, "Well, there's a dermatologist down the hall here, you know, a few doors down. Maybe you should just, you know, get an appointment with him." And I said, "Okay, well, I'll do that." And I didn't think much about it. So I don't know, a few weeks later, I decided to go get an go to see this guy. And I go in his office and I pulled off my shirt. He looks at me and he starts to get all excited. He backed off and he says, "Oh my gosh, I think you have melanoma." And I'm looking at it. I said, "You think that mole's melanoma?" He goes, "I kind of think it is. I'm pretty sure it is. You know, we'll have to do a little testing and everything, but I'm sure it's melanoma. We're probably going to have to remove a big section of your tissue around that on your back. And then that doesn't mean we'll get it all. We might have to do more surgery." And I didn't like his bedside manner. He acted like he was, almost giddy, and excited. Like, I always say like he discovered the Holy Grail or something, and he was excited.
It's still to this day, the diagnosis gets them into more money. So it's just this weird thing that if you don't find, you got to find something on your patient to get you excited and make money. That's the whole system. Gosh. You know that. So,
well, it scared me so much because I didn't know much about melanoma. And, this day and time with the internet, we hear more about things and there's just more information out there. But, I remembered my stepmother that raised me pretty much said, there's these moles. So I had two or three moles on my back. These moles can turn into cancer and they can kill you, and I'm like, oh my gosh, that'd be terrible. Well, now I remember that though, her words. I'm there and that doctor's looking at me and he's saying, "We got to do all this stuff." I didn't like his bedside manner, John. There's something about him I didn't like. He had a strange look. He was too excited acting, And I told him, "Well, I'll think about it. I'll get back to you." And I left the office and of course I never went back to him, but I went home and I was a mess then. I was a nervous wreck. I felt, like the fear was just up to here,
You totally understand, especially since you didn't really have any education at that point.
No.
As far as what, how to treat things like this or do anything at that point, you had the lack of knowledge. So that increases the false evidence appearing real.
It does. So I go home, I go into the house, my wife's there. And I said, "Oh, the doctor thinks I have melanoma cancer." She says, "What?" Like that. I said, I hope he's wrong because he scared the hell out of me, and she says, "Well, you need to get another opinion." She had worked in hospitals and stuff when she was in college and stuff. She says, "You need to get another opinion." And I said, "Okay, that's probably a good idea." She said, "You need to find another dermatologist that you maybe, trust more and feel more comfortable with." And I remembered a dermatologist that I'd seen about 10 years before, down in Houston. I was living about an hour's drive north of Houston and out in the country. And so I got an appointment, went to see this doctor. And he says, "Well, I think it looks suspicious to me too." But he says, "It's probably nothing. My wife had melanoma on her back and it was stage 1 and I removed it and she's never had another issue." And that was 5 years ago. And I'm like, "Oh, okay. Well, hopefully if it is, it's that." He goes, "I'm sure it probably is something. If it is," he said, "but I'm going to get you an appointment with the best guy anywhere that deals with these kind of things. And he's here in Houston. He's down at that big hospital down there. And he's like the cat's meow when it comes to this kind of stuff. And he's an oncologist.
He's an expert because he builds the most possible revenue he possibly can off his patients." I'm sorry. I'm so tainted.
You're probably right.
Yeah.
He goes, "He's an oncologist." And I went, oh, I don't want that. I don't want to hear that name. But I thought, well, if you got to go to somebody, go to the best of the best. And he said, "This guy's the best of the best." And, I didn't know anything about alternatives back then. I just didn't know. You go to the doctor. Doctor gives you a shot or gives you a pill and says, "If it doesn't work, come back in 2 weeks, we'll give you something else," So the whole idea is I'm going in to see this guy, and I walked in and he says, "Well, what's going on here?" And I said, "Well, I got this mole on my back and you know, a couple of doctors think it might be, you know, melanoma. He goes, well, you know, it looks a little suspicious, but they like to use that word suspicious. He said, it looks a little suspicious, but we're not going to know until we just remove it. He says, I can remove it right here in the office. And he says, let's get you in here and prep you up and lay down on this table. And he went to work on me, and he cut a big plug out of me. Oh, and, you know, wow. I had an incision about that long. And, you know, and he says, listen, hopefully it's not going to be anything. Hopefully it'll be, you know, just nothing. He says, but, you know, we'll send it to the lab and I'll get back to you in a few days. He said, we'll see what it is. And then we won't have to worry anymore, hopefully. So what did I do? I go home. I worried. I couldn't sleep very well. I'm thinking about, oh, what if it is?
How old were you at that point? 84?
32.
Young. Yeah, just a youngster.
So I'm laying there in the bed and I'm like, can't sleep. And, you know, it's just, and, you know, of course, my wife would say, don't worry, you're going to be fine. Don't worry. It's, you know, it's how it is. Easy for someone else to say that. It's just the nice thing to say to somebody. But
absolutely. She wants to be supportive.
I was always kind of a happy-go-lucky guy. I was ambitious at this point in my life and, you know, had several successful businesses. And, you know, and I always look forward to, you know, the future and all that. And after this, I was getting to where I just, like, didn't want to go into the office, you know. So anyway, it was almost 3 weeks before I heard back from this doctor. And I didn't know why it was taking so long.
Torturous.
And we called the doctor's office and they said, you know, oh, he's going to get a hold of you here soon, I'm sure. He's busy. So anyway, I'm like, oh my gosh, you know. So he calls me up and he says, I got some good news and I got some bad news. And he says to me, he says, the good news is that we think we got it all. It's melanoma and we think we got it all. And I'm thinking, melanoma, that's good news. He goes, but the bad news is that it's very deep. And he says, it's deep on a scale called the Clark scale. And he says, you know, that's how we rate the different stages. And he says, yours is stage 4. And he says, that's not good because stage 4 is really deep and it's very good chance it's going to spread, you know, to your lymphatic system, to another organ, to somewhere else in the body, and it's going to metastasize, and we got to keep a real close watch on it, and you need to come in every 3 weeks, and we'll check you out, and I mean every 3 months, not 3 weeks, every three months.
Yes.
And we're going to feel under your arms. We're going to feel all over you and make sure there's nothing, you know, bulging out or any tumors or anything forming. And he says, that's all we can do. And hopefully we'll never see this again. So anyway, I thought, well, what's my chances? You know, I don't know. And so I went in every 3 months. I went in a couple of different times. Everything was okay. I felt okay. But, you know, I was a little tired and all that. I noticed that before, and I didn't know why I was so tired all the time. But you know, I got to be one of these guys who was a worrywart about it, and I wasn't the same guy anymore. And before I knew it, my wife decided she's going to leave me.
Whoa.
And she's like, I am not dealing with this guy or using it for an excuse to leave me, you know. So,
wow.
You know, no marriage is perfect.
No,
but you know, I guess it was the time she didn't want to be around me.
Definitely not for better or worse. Sorry. That's
It's not the time, you know, but it was hard on me. But after that, I kind of felt like, you know, what's the use and all that. You kind of get into that.
Had you changed your diet or done anything at that point? And so
the doctor said, don't worry, don't do anything. Just live your life. There's nothing you can do.
Of course, just keep eating sugar and all that kind of, and
oh food.
After
that she left me, I started drinking again more and going out to these backwoods, you know, honky tonks and having a few beers and shooting pool and, you know, just everything go away then, you know. But then it comes back the next day. So So anyway, a good friend of mine says, hey, you know, you need to get you get this off your mind. You know, you can't live with this kind of stuff. You're stressed out and this isn't good. You're used to being in, you know, business and working and having something to place to go every day. Cause I didn't even want to go to the office anymore after this. And so anyway, I started to work with these guys and things were, you know, looking up. I thought, well, I'll go to work with these guys and things were going up. But then, you know, about my third 3 month period, I had to go in 9 months. I went in to get checked and everything was fine. Right after that, I was taking a shower and one day and I felt this big lump in my groin and I went, oh my God. You know, it's like that. You take a big swallow kind of and say, oh, what is this? And so I went in to see the doctor. He said, come on in, let's check it out. He looks at it, he goes, it's probably nothing. He might have bumped yourself or something. It's a lymph node that's irritated. And he says, you just go on back. You come in, you know, and, you know, on your regular time and we'll check it out again, see where it is. So, but this thing kept getting bigger and bigger, John. And I called him up and I said, this thing's getting to be really big now and it's growing. He says, you better get in here and let's look at it. And I got in. He goes, I see what you mean. He said, let's get you in the hospital in the morning first thing. Let's go in and take that out and see what it is. He says, chances are it's nothing. So that's how they do. So you anyway.
That. Yeah, you heard that. It's suspicious, but chances are it's nothing.
I heard that a lot. Yep. So I go in. And he said before the surgery, probably just do a little incision, probably won't mount to anything. And I'm sure it's, you'll be fine and all that. And the anesthesiologist before he put me out said, oh yeah, it's probably nothing. And I was laying there, you know, you wake up right after it's done, but I knew I was in trouble because you got, you know, this huge bandages all over me. And I knew this wasn't just the one little old incision. I felt like I'd been gutted and I had been. And they had removed all my lymph nodes, my major lymph nodes on my right lower in the groin area.
Without even talking about doing that in the first place.
No, they just went in and just basically gutted me because he said that was all. He came in. He says, I'm sorry to tell you that your cancer spread into your groin, into your lymphatic system. He goes, that's not what we wanted. That's what we were kind of afraid of. And it's happened. Now we got to get real aggressive, James. And I said, so what, you know, what are we going to do? And he goes, well, regular chemotherapy doesn't respond to this kind of cancer. This is an aggressive cancer you have. He says to me, he says, we're going to give you experimental chemotherapy. An experimental chemotherapy, we're going to raise your temperature. It's a hypothermia temperature, you know, type chemotherapy. Well, I didn't know about any of this stuff. And I hear about it more nowadays. They're doing stuff like that, immunotype, right, you know, therapy and this and that. But I didn't know about it. But he says, we're going to raise your temperature as high as we can without it hurting you. And then we're going to induce the chemotherapy through an IV. It's going to take about 8 to 10 hours a day. And you'll do 5 treatments after 3 weeks of recovering from the surgery. And he said, you'll just stay in the hospital while you're here because you're going to, you know, this was pretty bad. And he said, it's going to take a while to recover from this surgery. Now we can, after that, we can do this chemotherapy. And he says, it's going to be 80 treatments.
Oh.
He said, five every 2 months. You do five, come in the hospital for a week, five, you know, it's just, and he said, you know, that's all we know to do. And then he says, you know, after all this surgery we did on you, he says, you're going to have to do a lymph drainage pump every day, several hours a day, probably for several years, maybe for longer, because you got all this drainage and, you know, we don't want you to get lymphedema and lose your leg. So that's like, okay, he's telling me this, now I'm going to lose my leg. Ugh. And I mean, this guy was the big guy, you know, and he says to me, he goes, but this is all we know to do. And, you know, that's what we need to do. And I was there and I said, Doc, you know, what are my chances going forward? And he goes, well, you know, I think we, you know, maybe we should wait and see and kind of just see how it goes. And I said, no, I want to know what, from your experience, what do you think, you know, I'm looking at here, just so I know, because, you know, I got to make decisions about a lot of things. He goes, well, tell you the truth, I don't like to tell you this, but you've got a 20% chance of surviving 3 to 5 years. But that's if we can get you through this chemo.
Yeah, I was going to say, they lie to you. They lie to people to say 20%. You know, yeah. The actual statistics are 3 to 5% and have been steady that, to get to 5 years once you start that chemo and radiation. But anyway, you know all this. I'm not telling you that you don't know. But
No, but he says to me, he says, if we
I just wish, when I hear these type of stories, I know you made it through and here you are healthy, but I wish I could transport myself back in time and put my arm around you and go, here, James, here's what you really need to do, you know. So
So I'm there, I'm laying there in the bed, and you know, and I'm thinking, you know, like, oh my gosh, you know, I got to do 80 treatments and I've got this experimental stuff. I don't know what that's going to be like. I got to recover from this surgery, and I was in a lot of pain. And you know, I tried to not take painkillers. I couldn't, you know, it was too hard. So they give you, you know, morphine and all that to try to kill everything. And then after that, you don't feel anything.
Right.
So
that's a big thing. Now, did you do any conventional treatments besides what they said was experimental? Did you do any of the stuff that is tried and true for the type of cancer they said you had?
Well, no, I didn't do anything. I just did the experimental
surgery.
I did the surgery, and then I did some of this chemotherapy.
Okay.
But I didn't really want to do it, but I didn't know what else to do. So I'm sitting there, I'm thinking, you know, I got to find something else. There's got to be something else. I was always this guy that's kind of more open, not knowing, but open to things. I said, I'm not a big doctor lover here. There's got to be something I can do. So I'm laying there in the hospital, and, you know, several days later, you know, I was depressed and everything, because, you know, it's who wouldn't be? And I wasn't one of these guys that says, I'll beat this. And, you know, I'm going to do, I was frightened, you know, and, so I got a phone call. This is when everything started happening for me. And I believe that it was meant to be, and this is why I'm still around. But I got a phone call, and it was from a minister at a church I'd gone to on and off for several years. And he was a runner like me. And he was older than me, but he was an ex-professional baseball player and kind of a, you know, go-getter, tough kind of guy. And we knew each other and ran together a few times. And he just said, James, this is Ron. Ron was his name. And he says, you know, I heard about you in here. And he says, I want you to know you're not all alone. I've been praying for you. And many people in the church and in town have been praying for you. And, you know, everybody knows what's going on with you. I want you to know that if anybody can beat this cancer, you can. And he says, I want you to know that. And I believe you're a tough guy. You know how to push yourself. You know what it takes when you need to do something and get up and roll up your sleeves and do it. And you're the kind of guy I think can beat this. And he says to me then, he says, you beat this son of a bitch in cancer, is what he said.
The pastor, yep.
And I'm like, whoa, you know, I never heard him talk like that. And
right.
He says probably a few other words. And he says, you gotta get strong. He says, and you're gonna make it. And he, you know, and I got to thinking about that. It really got me to thinking from that phone call, because I was feeling pretty down and sorry for myself and all that. And you know, things really started happening, because I said, I got to do something. He didn't tell me what to do. He didn't know. But I started to pray. I mean, I started to pray to God, and I never prayed that much and I like that. And I never had this kind of a feeling with every cell in my body. It felt like I was kind of an out of body experience. I was so desperate to find something. So I'm laying there praying. And I prayed really hard and probably had tears in my eyes and just felt like, you know, this is a strange feeling. This is the strangest prayer I've ever had. And I didn't understand it at the time. But I would say probably 20 minutes later, I got a knock on the door. And here comes this fellow through the door. Here I'm laying back here. I come in, you know, and they usually leave those doors cracked open a little bit. So if you holler or something, I guess somebody can, you know, I don't know.
Somebody can hear you. Yeah.
So he comes through the door and he's got these papers in his hand. And, you know, he came in and he says, I heard you were in here from one of our old buddies. He goes, I just feel terrible about this. He said, I was having lunch with a friend of mine the other day and we were talking about you. And he brought me an article yesterday about a guy that healed himself of cancer using a diet and lifestyle. And he says, I just felt like I needed to get in here and give this to you. I was driving around here in this area, around the hospital. I knew where you were, but I was kind of like hesitant. Do I go in and see James or do I, you know, is it, do I get involved in this? What should I do? He said, something told me to get in there. And I just pulled in, I came in, he came in with that. And I said to him, I'm going to do what's in that paper you have, those papers there. And it was a book review of in a magazine called Let's Live magazine. I don't know if it's still around or not, but it was a magazine back in the day. People don't read magazines like they used to. But anyway, it was a book review in there. And it talked about this guy. And the guy's name was Dirk Benedict. And Dirk Benedict was on a TV show called The A-Team.
Yep.
And he was the younger, good-looking guy that was on there. And I knew who he was. But this was about him overcoming prostate cancer using a diet lifestyle. The diet was the macrobiotic diet. Well, mm-hmm. I didn't know. I never heard of that.
Yep.
And I said to my friend, have you ever heard of this? He goes, no, I don't know anything about this. I just brought this because I thought it might be helpful for you to see that another guy got well, maybe it could help you. And well, I got excited because I knew this was what I was supposed to do. And I knew where it came from.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, would you go out and get this book for me? He goes, yeah, I could do it. I'll see if I can find it. And it was The Confessions of a Kamikaze Cowboy. And I'm sure you've probably seen that book.
But I probably have. So many books in the vault.
It really wasn't a program or anything. It was just talking about his life and about how he discovered macrobiotics. And it kind of saved him from cancer and his life, kind of, you know. And by changing the way he ate, the way he looked at the food, all that. And it got me interested because this guy was from a ranch, originally grew up on a ranch in Montana. Well, I had a little gentleman's ranch in Texas. Well, you know, I related to him being from Texas and him from Montana, mm-hmm. you know, you know, I just kind of felt like, you know, maybe we were meant to meet someday, maybe even. But I got excited. He went out and got that book. He brought that book in and I couldn't put it down. I started reading it and wanting to know as much information as I could. So I'm excited. I'd made up in my mind that I'm going to do this.
And this was in 1986 or
what? It was 1980. This was in 86 by this time.
Okay. So had you, how quickly did that book help you, get to the, you know, everybody wants to know the root causes, or did you discover the root causes?
Well, I did eventually, but what happened, and then when I was there, here I'm laying there, and the next day I got another knock on my door. It was my stepmother. She comes through the door, and she had this book in her hand, and she's saying, I got this book from one of our relatives, and it's about vitamin C and cancer. I said, really? And it was written by, it was Dr. Linus Pauling's book with Ewan Cameron. Anyway, it was that book, and I started looking at it, and it talked about all these people that were terminal, and when they take high dose vitamin C, that they would, you know, stick around, and a lot of them would, some of them would even get well. And I'm
just as a sideline, just to interrupt you just for a second, we have a handwritten letter from Dr. Linus Pauling, who was a great hero while he was studying all these things. But as soon as he started coming up with a natural answer to cancer, then they treated him like he was just, crazy person. And he wrote a letter to Dr. Ralph Moss, who was at Sloan Kettering when they proved about Lantrell. And he said, someday they're going to take all these losers down that are lying to the American public. This should be criminal for what they're doing. That was from Linus Pauling. We have that. Yeah. We found that in the vault. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. I loved it. And I looked at this and I said, if it'll help those people, it'll help me. I'm going to do this too. I'm going to do this macrobiotic diet and lifestyle. And then I'm going to do this vitamin C. So I'm excited now. I'm really excited. And, you know, I'm starting to, this depression I had and this fear started to melt away. So the next morning, it's 3 days. I got three knocks on the door. I wouldn't be here today. Here comes a guy through the door. He's a little guy, kind of in glasses and 50s probably. And he says, I'm the hospital psychotherapist. This was one of those hospitals in Houston that had, you know, was cancer, big known for cancer. So I'm there and he walks in. He says, I hear you've been depressed. He says, I want to see if I can help you out a little bit. And he said, could I come back here tomorrow and visit with you for a little bit? And I said, well, yeah, yeah, I'll be fine. And so he said, I'll be back first thing in the morning. So the next morning came. Well, I was already studying up on all this, what I could study, and I was excited. And he walks through that door, and I said, listen, I want to ask you a question. Right when he comes in, I said, have you ever heard of macrobiotics? He looked at me and like
you're kind
of strange. He turned around and started going out. I thought, oh, I ran him off. Oh, boy, I said the wrong thing. He goes out in the hall, looks up and around on the hall. He opens the door. He comes back in, shuts the door. He says to me, he says, I have heard of it, but I'm not going to tell you what I know unless you promise you'll never tell a soul. We had this conversation. Wow. And I said, oh, I won't tell anybody. Now I know I'm onto something. He goes on about, hey, this is a great program for, this was back when macrobiotics was really popular. You know, he goes, I've heard a lot of good things about this. It takes a lot of determination, a lot of time, you know, preparing your food and doing these exercises. And it's, you know, it's not going to be just an easy lay here in the bed and make it happen. He says, I've tried to follow this diet because I think it's a great diet, but I just couldn't do it because it took so much of my time and I just couldn't stick with it. But he says, you know, by the way, you don't look so depressed after all. He tells me, he says, you're the kind of guy I think that could do this. You're young enough. You seem determined, you know, after just talking to you for a minute. He says, you're the kind of guy that I think could benefit from this. Now, he says, again, there's a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it. He says, you've got to roll those sleeves up. You got to get down and get busy with it. And you can't cut any corners. He said, if you start cutting corners, it's not going to work for you. He said, I've studied this. I've known several people that did very well on this. And he says, I'm just telling you right now, if you decide to do this, you just remember my words. Well, I never forgot his words. And I can tell you, I was so excited then when he left. Because now I knew I was on the right track to something. You know, that's all I knew. I didn't know anything else.
Right.
And I wasn't going to get talked into anything by anybody. It just, no one had to talk me into it. I just, you know, felt like there was this connection that had gotten my attention. Now this is laid in front of me and it's my time to do this and give it my all. And if it didn't work for me, it wasn't going to work for anybody else. That was my battle cry.
That's amazing. Now, let me just, for timing reasons, it feels like we could have done a long form and gone for hours. I know we could.
We
only have about 10 more minutes left. So I just want to make sure that we get some of the...
Yeah, we can go through the rest real quick.
Yeah.
But I ended up doing the chemotherapy and the stuff was terrible. I got in there.
Even after that?
Well, I had to wait for 3 weeks. I did it and I got through it. And then I came back 2 months later and did it. Well, by then I was transitioning over to the macrobiotic diet on my own. Well,
so how many courses of the chemo did you do then? How many of those every three week things did you do?
Well, you do one every day for 5 days. It's about an 8 to 10 hour period because you're laying there in the bed and your temperature is high and it's awful. And it feels like you're being tortured. Yeah. And so I made it through it, and I got through the second one very close to it. And I was in the bed one day in the hospital, because you'd go in and out. You have to come back in and stay there because you couldn't be out. You couldn't do it from your home or driving the car and get it. It was different. And I remember them coming in. Oh, my God, his temperature is too high. And I was so out of it. I was laying there. And nurses were running around putting ice packs on me and all this. And I was so out of it. Well, the doctor came in the next morning. And he says, I hear you had some issues. I said, yeah, I'm just sick. It's terribly sick. I can't eat. I can't, you know, I just lay here. I have no energy. I'm sick. And he says, well, your body's not responding. And he says to me, he says, listen, he said, this is all we know to do. And I said to myself, if I don't get out of here, they're going to kill me in here. Because people were dying every other night in the hallway, you know, coming out of the rooms from chemotherapy, poison. So yep. I'm laying there, and this doctor comes in, and I said, listen, doctor, what would you do if it was your daughter or son? Would you do this to them? Oh, yeah. I don't know anything else to do. That's what I would do. And he said, I said, but this stuff could kill me. It could kill them. He goes, well, we're all going to die sometime. And boy, when he said that to me, John, I reared up in that bed. I had no energy, and I was, you know, lost weight. And I said, listen here, doc, if I could get out of this bed, I'd tear you apart. I saw it just took my hope away. He's trying to, It made me so mad. I was fighting mad for a sick guy. And I made up my mind then when he walked out of that door like he'd seen a ghost. Then two nights later, I snuck out. I snuck out of the hospital at 2 a.m, as you said at the beginning, and I had no energy and ended up throwing up two times on the way to my mother's house, which was over an hour away. And I just was sick. And I said, I'm going to do this macrobiotic diet. I'm going to do the vitamin C. I'm going to do anything else that I think I need to do. And I'm not going to look back, and I'm going to give it 150%. It doesn't work for me. It ain't going to work for anybody else. That was my battle cry. And, you know, and that's what I've done. I mean, the story goes on and on and on.
Right.
It is a 2-hour story.
Yeah.
But I did and discovered a lot over the last 40 years. And, you know, not only it's diet, detox, supplementation. And I like to say, you've got to feed thy spirit, you know, Amen. Our emotion, spirit, have some fun in your life. But, you know, the things that I really do every day, I've been doing this for, you know, 35 years.
Yep.
I mean, after I started, I got into supplementation big time. I mean, people think I'm nuts to this day, but I'm still around. I take all these anti-cancer supplements. You know, I take about 150 pills a day. I mean, I have, and you know, I do
because it's not in our food anymore.
I take huge amounts of vitamin C, and you know, any study I see, anything I do, you know, I do. I don't do everything because you can't do everything, but the sleeves stay rolled up, you know, and I exercise every day. I mean, you know, there's a day or two you miss, but you know, I do it all, and I've, you know, learned about parasites. You know, intestinal parasites are one of the most immunosuppressive. That's part of my story. Mm-hmm. And I learned that from a parasitologist at that time that said to me, I've never seen a person with cancer or AIDS. AIDS was kind of big back then, that didn't have some kind of parasitic involvement.
Pretty much, as we know, almost everybody has parasites. It's just how reduced your immune system is as to how much they can take over. So did you ever kind of come to a conclusion about your own lifestyle and the root causes or the reasons?
I've learned a lot. And after one of the first things I looked into is why did I get this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, was it from the sun? Was it from, you know, just too much sun? You know, like say sun. Well, melanoma is from a lot of toxicity. Mm-hmm. And I was exposed to a lot
the
of
sun
chemicals.
Actually helps.
Yeah, I was exposed to a lot of petrochemicals. I had gas stations when I was young. I used to pump gas every day for 8 or 10 hours a day, sitting there breathing those fumes for 10 years. I did that, and here I am, you know, then I get sick, and then I'm eating this vegan diet pretty much and running 60 miles a week and burning myself, you know, to a crisp with just no energy, tired. Your immune system's probably dragging very, you know, I was sick a lot. Started getting colds a lot, flus, you know, and allergies everywhere. So I learned that that's part of it, but I've learned over the years, there's something called the kind of like the cancer cascade. I don't know if you've ever heard that, but the cancer cascade is all about why we end up with cancer, detectable cancer. Because we all have cancer cells in our body, you know, from day to day. And there's sometimes several hundred thousand cells the average person has in their body. It sounds like crazy.
I'm 100% sure of that from all the research that I have. I have 100 years of research. I'm 100% sure of what you're saying, that we all have cancer every day in our body. So, yes, absolutely.
And the thing about it is the immune system keeps it under wraps, because we're born with an immune system. And as we get older, that immune system, you know, gets weaker a lot of times, and sometimes when we're young, because of our abuse to our body, our toxicity levels to our body, and the immune system gets tired. It can't do its job anymore. So the cancer cells start to build and build and build and build. So I've learned that you've got to be on top of your game all the time. And it's just like, I mean, you talk a lot about, you know, the apricot seeds.
And, yeah, I talk about it because of the amygdala is found in it, not because there's a magical thing.
No,
it's found in probably if I looked at your diet, I could say that it's found in, you know, 50% of the foods that you're eating right. And the people that eat a natural diet have a lot of amygdala. They don't associate it with amygdala as why their cancer is in remission.
Yeah.
But amygdala, the biochemistry of it has been proven without any shadow of a doubt that it actually kills those free floating cancer cells. It's when it metastasizes, when they start cutting body parts out and things like that, that it gets more complicated. But we only have a couple, like literally a minute left, James. And so tell people about the Templeton Foundation, how they can find out more of the story, how they can watch videos from you, all that kind of stuff. I have your book up there.
Well,
I recommend everybody get your book, 100%. Get the book, learn about this, because he has so much to teach. So how do people get a hold of you?
Well, they can get a hold of me at templetonwellness.com. And they can also check out our restaurant guide, templetonlist.com. That's the healthiest restaurants in America. We have a guide. There's almost 10,000 restaurants. And it's farm to table, organic. So there's something for everybody on there. So if you're going to eat out, eat it the best. Don't just, you know, your body's important. Your health is important. If you don't have that, you don't have anything. But they can check out our interviews. I interviewed you. I've interviewed a lot of people, a lot of experts like yourself. Mm-hmm. And I've also interviewed a lot of survivors like myself. And I feel that people can educate themselves in just a matter of 2 or 3 days, really educate themselves, especially if they have cancer. Because if you have cancer, you got to make that decision. Am I, you know, usually you get detected from on a conventional on a level from a doctor, conventional doctor, and he's going to want you to do chemotherapy, radiation, and who knows what else. But are you going to want to do that or not? How do you know? Or, you know, there's a lot of things to think about. You know, the money is a big issue. Can you get behind? Can you roll up your sleeves? Can you be like me and change your lifestyle and understand that this cancer didn't just pop out of nowhere. It's only, most of these cancers are 90% self-induced. You know,
I couldn't agree with you more. And I like I said, I could continue talking to you for hours about this. And I really want our teams to get together and help each other, because we're developing a list of 31 doctors so far that are using metabolic therapy, including Laetril and all macro diets and the Mediterranean diet. So we really need to work together, but unfortunately our time has come to an end. So God bless you. Thank you so much, James. And we will get back into each other's, maybe we could do something regular. We could really help people spread this word. I'll be in Missouri this weekend. You know, probably in more in your neck of the woods to speak with a bunch of about 500 health practitioners to tell them more about the story. And I'd like to continue our mission together. So God bless you.
Well, thank,
thank you so much for being on here. And that's it for Hidden Healings Uncensored today. Thank you so much.